How's everyone doing? There we go. That might. I'm having difficulties today. CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Ink Studs. It's me, Robin, sitting here with my man, Colin, and I'm joined by Mr. Alex Robinson. I got you there, Alex?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us this week for a conversation about your comics.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine.
You are our focus of attention for today.
Hello. Oh, it's Colin.
I'm going to let you down.
Hey, Alex, it's Colin. How are you doing?
Hey, Kate, Colin.
So we're going to talk about your first book first, I guess. Or okay. Not your first book. Your most recent book, Tricked.
Okay, so the second book.
Yeah, second book first, and okay. Then we'll yak about other stuff. But I think the primary attention is to focus towards your new book. Well, I don't... Newish.
Yeah.
When did it come out?
It came out last summer.
Okay.
So it's a year, a little bit more than a year old.
And it's about, what, 400 pages?
350 pages.
I was right and wrong.
You're right in the middle.
Yeah. So Tricked, it's different from your other from Box Office Poison because it's a story all in itself, but it kind of extends from Box Office Poison a little bit.
Well, one of the a minor character in Box Office Poison is one of the main characters in Tricked, but it's not really like a sequel or anything. I don't want to mislead your mislead your listeners.
Well, actually,
lead your listeners into thinking that it's a sequel that you have to read the first one. It's entirely self-contained, and you know you don't need to read the first one at all in order to get maximum enjoyment out of it.
And actually, I first read Tricked before reading Box Office Poison.
Oh, okay.
And Tricked was great. I really liked it. It was a neat, kind of held in itself story, really complex, and there's a lot of features I really liked about it. One I thought was neat was your crazy guy.
Uh-huh.
And the development of his psychosis.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to do. those chapters were frighteningly easy to write. Yeah, I just sort of tapped into my my inner crank and, you know, no editing whatsoever. Just whatever I was thinking or, you know, not whatever I was thinking, but, you know, I just sort of, not me at all.
So,
no, it, you know, I would just sort of, you know, just blurt it all out and you know, they were fun and very easy to write.
Did you do a lot of research into, you know, psychological conditions for that?
Not specifically. I didn't want to make it any one specific. Like, I didn't want to... Well, number one is I'm lazy, so I don't want to do a lot of research. But also, I didn't want to limit it to a very specific illness. So, like, you know, say I made him schizophrenic, then... You know, or if I specified what his illness was, then, then I'd say, like, well, that's not really what it's like, you know. So, you know, I sound a bit crazy right now.
it's the comics industry. I think that's a prerequisite toward before getting involved.
Okay. I didn't do any research. To answer your, the short answer is, I did not do any research, mostly because I just wanted to sort of do a broad version of craziness rather than tied to any one specific illness.
Well, one thing that was interesting for me is outside of doing the radio show and plugging away at school is I actually work with people with mental health illness,
mm-hmm.
and hardcore drug addictions in like the sleaziest part of Vancouver, and I thought it was a pretty good portrayal of schizophrenia.
Oh, well, thank you.
The interesting like so that's why I was curious, like, if you'd done any research, because it is really neat how you do the onset, you know, stopping the meds, you know, I'm fine, I don't need my meds, I'll be okay. And then how everything kind of builds up, and then, you know, you're doing something incredibly insane, and, you know, most people would end up getting locked up, but he goes on a trip.
Well, I didn't do any formal research, but I've always been interested in mental illness, just as a sort of casual... you know, watch documentaries or you know, I read some, I've read like a biography of Mark David Chapman, and I was curious to depict it sort of from the inside, sort of. Does that make any sense?
Cause, yeah.
Well, just sort of just to, like, how does someone rationalize, like, oh, you know, an antelope came up to me and started telling me about the, you know, that the president was really a space alien. How is that
reality for them?
Yeah, if that happened to me, I'd be like, well, this has to be crazy because obviously antelopes don't talk, but clearly people who are in that situation, they're like, well, there's an antelope here and it's talking to me, so
it never,
you know,
listened.
I'd be crazy to doubt my own senses, but I don't know. It's always been a fascinating subject to me.
Never listen to the antelope.
Right. At least that's what my other half says. my other personality tells.
Well, it's interesting. Like, psychosis, it is a quite a lengthy topic, and like to be able to, like, I don't know, it's a lot of like stuff with people when it's coming into their head and they're hearing these things. It's such a reality to them. To, like,
right.
You know, like, I know you don't hear it, but it's there.
Oh, it's, yeah. I mean, it's right obviously there. It must be that way because, you know, that's what they tell us. So that's sort of how I just approached it as well. Just, you know, everything that is happening to him, he believes is entirely real. He does not think it's crazy at all. So
now, part of the story of Trick is pretty close to what happened with John Lennon.
Right.
You mentioned Chapman. And so how is John Lennon such an important figure for you? Because he is used in Box Office Poison in reference
right.
with one of the characters writing about John Lennon.
Well, I guess when I was about 13 or so, I really got into the Beatles. And that was like throughout high school, like I listened to them, you know, religiously. And I'm still a huge Beatles fan. And I guess it's just the idea of any... You know, for a time, I guess I would say John Lennon was like a hero of mine. But then I went through sort of another phase where it was like, I read Albert Goldman's awful biography about, which came out in like 89 or something, called The Lies of John Lennon. Basically, it was like a saying that the whole John Lennon myth about, you know, him and Yoko being in love and him retiring to be a house husband and, you know, everything was so beautiful. It was basically a lie that he was a drug addict up until the end of his life, and he kicked a sailor to death in Liverpool or Hamburg, and all this, like, basically the evil version of John Lennon. I was, you know, for a time, I was sort of like, well, I think, and I actually probably believe the truth is somewhere between the John and Yoko version and the Albert Goldman version, because the John and Yoko version is just too idealized and, you know, like, you know, it's like a fairy tale kind of, except for the fact that he gets killed at the end. But so I was interested in sort of exploring the my own feelings about John Lennon and hero worship and that kind of thing. In an earlier version of the story, it was much more a blatant examination of, you know, an even thinlier veiled John Lennon, but I pulled it back some.
Okay. Now, was this originally intended to be a big, voluminous book, or were you going to do serialize it like you did with Box Office Poison?
Well, Top Shelf, my publisher, after I finished Box Office Poison, we signed a deal to do another book, and I wanted to do it serialized, and they pushed for it to be come out as one volume, thinking that it would make more of a splash when it came out. You know, it would be more like an event when it happened, as opposed to, oh, this is just a collection of a series that had come out. So I was very nervous about it at first, and it took me a long time to get used to that work habit, because, you know, I used to be having a quarterly or bi-monthly deadline. It really kept you on your toes, but, you know, having a deadline that's like 2 years away, you're like, well, I can spend one day, you know, wasting my time playing Spider Solitaire on the computer. I can take it up another day, and, you know, next thing you know, I've... have a great record at Spider Solitaire, and I haven't done any work, so it took a while to get used to that.
Did it change your approach to the writing?
It did, in the sense that when you do what I do, a serialized story, you sort of have to, you know, not end on quite cliffhangers, but you sort of have to wrap up each chapter and have it be, like, you know, somewhat closure, but also leave it open enough where people will want to come back and read. Whereas in this one, I can just make each chapter as long as I want it and have to worry about, you know, wrapping up anything or also it gave me more time to let the story build, because I didn't have to hook people in the first 20 pages. You know, I could, you know, they already bought the book, so I could take my time sort of, you know, laying the groundwork and letting it build up gradually, instead of being like, you know, ta-da, here's the hook of the story, and now, come on! You know, it could go a little bit more naturally, for better or for worse.
Create, in Trick, it's six primary people, characters, all completely different. When you're creating that kind of, like, diversity in characterization, what kind of, like, strategy? Do you use, like, kind of, like, people you know, like, pseudo-autobiographical, or is it just, like, kind of trying to pull it out of your head?
It's a little of both. In a way, it's certainly less autobiographical, because none of the characters are as close to I am. Like, in my first book, Box Office Poison, the main character, Sherman, he worked in a bookstore, he, you know, was a history buff. All the characters in the story had some more obvious connection with me. There's a cartoonist in the book, there's, you know, a drunk in the book. So all these people who have, like, common factors with me. And this one, it was a little, it was almost more of an internal, more of an internal autobiography, if that makes any sense whatsoever. You know, on the surface, they don't seem like they have much in common with me, but I think any writer, you have to be able to, you know, sort of tap into different parts of your personality and you know, channel that into other characters. So, I totally got lost in my own ramblings there. What was the question? It's about 300
character pages. Influences.
The characters, okay. So there you go.
Okay. Now,
you know, you're just going to have to cut me off when I start doing that.
Ah, Ravelin's all good.
Okay. You can always edit it, right?
Oh, no, yeah, sure.
We're live.
Oh, sorry.
That reminds me, what's your policy about profanity on the show?
We're in Canada.
Yeah.
We're college radio. How would I say this? Listener discretion is advised.
Okay.
Alex may swear a little. I may swear a little. There we go. There's our profanity disclaimer.
You can always bleep it. Well, because I just have a naturally filthy mouth, and I don't want to accidentally
let
something slip and have you be like, oh, now we're in trouble.
We've had Tony Millionaire on. We've had Evan Dorkin on. We've had our fair share of cussers, and I'm a pretty big cusser, too, so...
Oh, good.
In fact, last week we played a song for one of the local cartoonists called My Bitch is a Junkie.
Oh, well...
I forget the name of the performer.
Bitch doesn't even count as a swear word anymore, does it?
I don't know. The song was pretty offensive. Oh. It was about 5 minutes of My Bitch is a Junkie, My Bitch is a Junkie, My Bitch is a Junkie. I think there's about 2 words we can't say. And, you know, the obvious racial...
Oh, of course.
You know, slams. Now, I've totally side-railed and forgot what I was going to ask. why'd you choose XTC?
I love them. I really do like them. Well, it's odd because a lot of XTC people seem to favor their early stuff, but I got into them fairly late, and actually their last, like, 4 albums are the ones I love the most, and I'm very disappointed that Andy Partridge, the writer and singer, seems to have stopped, but you know.
Well, Colin was singing along with it.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite XTC album, that Wasp Star. That was, I guess, their last one, so that was my favorite one.
Well, unless you count the Wasp Star Redux.
Oh yeah, those. Well, that seems to be all they do. Then now he just seems to be reissuing, like, you know, demo tapes and things like that, which are, you know, fine, but, you know, I'd love to have a brand new album of new stuff, but
that's the way it goes. I think I've got just about every one of their albums.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to play another song now.
Okay.
What would you like us to play? We got the Joker.
I don't remember what I picked, so.
You have the Joker with, I guess that's a Bootsy Collins on there from Fatboy Slim.
Yeah, that's a song I've gotten into fairly recently, and I feel somewhat embarrassed being 37 years old and getting into, like, techno electronical music, but
it's Bootsy Collins in there.
Yeah, I think it's Fatboy Slim, and Bootsy Collins is doing the lead
bassline.
Yeah, or I think he's even doing the vocals on it. But
okay.
Yeah. So anyway,
how about that? How about the Fatboy Slim?
Sure.
Okay.
It's weird because I don't know if your listeners know I'm hearing it on the phone, so it's strange to be hearing us, like, you know, a song that I'm familiar with, like, as hold music while I'm sitting here listening to it.
It's a kind of a surreal experience, I think, for people coming on to the show, because it's not your regular hold music. And if, like, I get someone on soon, the show before is like a punk rock show. It's like you maybe listen to a little punk rock before the comic book show. So,
well, it's also funny because it's like the worst, you know, listening to it on the phone is like the worst audio quality ever.
Yeah, so, that's probably about right.
It's like one of those Edison reels, those Edison cartridge, you know, Cylinders, little, there you go.
Little wax cylinders.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, jeez.
Mary had a little lamb.
Oh.
Anyway, I'm dating myself, so.
Oh, I know what you're referring to. So we'll be back in a sec. Alex Robinson, creator of Box Office Poison and Tricked. And this is The Joker by Fatboy Slim with Bootsy Collins. Yay!
Some people call me the space cowboy, and some people call me the gangster of love. Yeah, and some people walking around calling me Maurice, 'cause I speak of the pompatus of love.
Oh, yeah. Have no fear, my dear.
People talk about me, baby.
Talk about me bad too.
They say I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong, doing you wrong. Well, don't let that worry you, baby.
Oh, baby, Bobo.
'Cause I'm right here, right here, right here, right here at home.
Everybody,
and I want you to know, baby, 'cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight talker. I get my loving on the run.
Oh, the joke is wrong, baby.
Come on and follow me. You know I really want you for your company. Even though I'm attached to you physically, my computer mechanism wants you mentally.
Yeah, baby.
I wanna shake your tree. A lovey dovey dovey lovey dovey all the time. Ooh wee, baby.
I'm gonna show you a good time, baby.
'Cause I'm a fool, I'm a girl, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I'll play my music in the sun.
People keep talking about me like a low-down dog,
like a low-life dog.
They say I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong,
doing you wrong.
Well, don't you know, don't you worry about a thing, pretty mama.
Don't you worry.
Because I'm right here, right here, right here, singing all along. Yeah, baby. You're the cutest thing I ever did see. And I really love your peaches. Woman, come shake for me.
Shake it.
Lovey dovey, lovey dovey all the time.
So, dance on over here, mama, you know. Let's have a good time. That's what I'm talking about.
'Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun.
Yeah, baby.
I'm a joker, I'm a smoker.
For shizzle dizzle, my nizzle fizzle dizzle.
Come on and follow me.
I'm taking back my style.
He's getting wild.
Yeah, get off my cloud, baby. Yeah.
He's throwing down knee deep.
Yeah.
I guess I'll be the freak of the week. I guess you'll be the freak of the week.
Joker.
Yeah.
He's wild.
The Joker is wild.
The Joker is wild.
Wild, I tell you.
www.citr in Vancouver. UBC, yada, yada, yada. This is Inkstuds. We are joined by Alex Robinson, writer, artist, creator of Tricked and Box Office Poison. And we're yakking about Tricked.
Hello, Canada.
Hello, Canada. And the wild wildernesses of Canada. And speaking of wild wildernesses, the importance of New York in your work.
Okay.
It seems an ongoing part of your process, because, I mean, I guess you're a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
What's the importance for you in using New York as a city, and what's your kind of vision of a New York in comparison with some of the other comic artists?
Oh, boy. Well, it's funny because I never really thought of it being that. Other people have asked me that, about connection with New York, and I never really thought of it as being that big of a thing. Mostly because I don't like drawing backgrounds, so I don't really use any. I don't do big cityscapes or any. It's not like I have. Usually, have the characters go to any specific locations, or I don't know. I guess I just get that New York feel just from being created there, and the fact that I lived here for 14 years now, or some crazy thing like that. So, with Box Office Poison, I did use some specific locations, but I generally tried to keep it. I didn't really use any specific sets or anything like that. So, I think it's just through osmosis.
Well, I was just rather. I was contrasting your vision of New York with that of another person we've interviewed, Bob Fingerman.
Mm-hmm.
And your New York seems to be a lot more benign.
Well,
less threatening somehow than Bob Fingerman's New York.
Yeah, that could be true. I don't know. Maybe he must lead a different life than I do. I generally don't leave the house too much, so it seems like a fairly nice place to me. But maybe if you actually went out and did things and interacted with people, it would seem much more oppressive.
It's been cleaned up too, hasn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's been cleaned up, hasn't it, New York?
Well, yeah, I guess it's been about 10 years now since Giuliani came to town and closed down all the pornography stores and cleaned up all the graffiti, so...
I'm so disappointed. My first trip to New York next month, and it's just clean.
Yeah,
wants guzziness.
We have a sort of a love-hate relationship with the tourists here because, we love it when they send money here, but, Times Square, like at Christmas time, it's like you can't walk around because it's like Disney World. It's just packed with people, and no one's used to walking, so they don't know how to be good pedestrians. And
So the tourists should just send their money and not themselves.
No, it's just take some walking lessons before you come. Get used to walking briskly and not
gawking.
Well, it's interesting. I had Abby Denson was in town a while ago, uh-huh. Another New York cartoonist, and we went to the subway just below the studio, and she was like, "My God, it's so slow! If this was New York, there'd be a riot from it." It's like, so I'm actually looking forward to that kind of madness.
Well, yeah, I guess compared to a lot of places, it's probably a bit hectic. Like I have people who've visited, so I don't know how you can live here because it's so
Well, Vancouver's the city of sedate potheads, so it'll be a nice change for me. Now, we'll talk a little bit about Box Office Poison, okay. Some of the themes in there. One thing that really strikes out to me, a couple of shades of... a big thing about creators' rights in there,
mm-hmm.
With the one guy with the superhero stuff, was it the Nighthawk? What am I doing interviews for? I can't remember. Like, how important do you feel that? Because now you're doing your own work, and I guess you own your own rights to your stuff, because Top Shelf's, I think they're decent folk.
Yep.
You think that's a really important thing in comics? Is that something like when you're doing this and you find out all the stuff that's happened to people, like you kind of get disgusted by it?
Well, I feel like it's less so these days because, that mostly spurred from when I was younger and, I guess in the 80s, Jack Kirby had his big battle with Marvel Comics and, before that was the one that sort of really hit me at the time. I mean, there's been ones before with Siegel and Schuster and afterwards with the Josie and the Pussycat case and, I don't know if people still go into it as naively as they once did. In fact, one of the flaws of the story, but a conceit I had to do was make Ed more naive than he should have been for someone his age who's that into comics. Like, Irving Flavor mentions, swiping artwork, copying other people's drawings and layouts and stuff. And, Ed reacts to it as if he's never heard of that. And
yeah.
Anyone who's gone, who's...
Just go to the Comic Journal message board.
even before that, I mean, I do remember when someone did tell me that, and I was fairly disgusted by it, but I was, like, a teenager at the time. And, it just seemed kind of lazy. Regardless of the ethics, it just seemed like, well, why are you in comics if you don't like drawing them enough to come up with your own ideas? I mean...
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping by this time everyone pretty much knows the story, and I guess the companies have become a little bit more equitable, paying royalties and giving people cuts of the characters they create and stuff, which was definitely different than it was, even 20 years ago when, that's when they first started instigating that stuff. So hopefully it's a lesson that no one needs anymore. It's sort of like everyone takes it for granted that the company's out to screw them and. Be on your guard and things like that.
Well, yeah, I had a chance to talk to Neil Adams, and he was telling me some of the stories from the 70s with the Schusters. And
I can imagine.
One of them sleeping on someone's couch in Brooklyn with a broken window and,
Yeah, I mean, it's just, really, you hear a lot of sad stories like that. Some freelancer, desperate for a job, being humiliated by some editor just because, they can, so.
Yeah. Not good. Let's just change it. Let's talk about happy stuff. The covers for Box Office Poison, I've got the book, and Colin's got the comics.
Right.
Why the choice not to include the covers in the book? Because I think the covers are great.
Oh, well, thank you. I think it was mostly a matter of the space. I think at the time, Top Shelf was very... They'd never done a book that large before, and they were very worried about... keeping it economical, and also just physically, they didn't know how thick the book could be and still be bound and ideally I wanted to include all the material, all the short stories as well that wound up being included in the BOP short story collection, mm-hmm. all the, anthologies, basically all the stories of those characters in one hefty volume, but as it was, we wound up cutting out some of the question pages that originally ran in the series, so we were pressed for space. In that one, so that was really why the covers were not included. I mean, you're actually the first person to ask, so I appreciate your.
Well, it's always something that bugs me with collections like that is because
right.
like Dave Sim, another person, great covers, 300 covers. Where are they?
Yeah.
I think that they're for me the best part of Cerebus. Especially when it goes all crazy.
It's an economic factor, too, because with the Cerebus covers especially, you'd want them to be color.
Yeah.
So I guess, I guess you could just do a 300-page, color portfolio or volume with all the covers. So.
We'll have to send him a letter and ask.
Well, I never actually thought about that. Now people are switching over to doing straight-to-graphic novel. We're losing out on all those covers.
Yeah.
That could have been.
But one thing, I'm a weird fanatical collector. I get all my comics bound into big books.
Really?
And one thing I'm doing is when I find lots of quarter comics and there's a cool cover, I'll just buy that, rip the cover off, and throw out the rest. And so I can do a book of covers.
Well, I love doing covers. That's the one thing I did miss with Trick was the chance to do covers and just coming up with sort of, interesting images or just how do you encapsulate this whole issue into one image? We're just trying to come up with something fun. So I've actually started doing my new story I'm working on now. I'm just serializing it in mini-comics format, and it's fun getting a chance to do covers again. And
that's Too Cool to Be Forgotten?
Yes, that's it.
And actually, if people are interested in checking that out, they can go to your website.
Right.
At members.aol.com/comicbookalex.
Yeah, right? That's right. It's an unwieldy... If you just Google my name, it's usually the first thing that comes up.
And that's actually what I did.
I mean, I'm... At this point, I'm as I mentioned before, I'm lazy and also cheap, so the idea of buying alexrobinsoncomics.com or something like that, just I have not actually looked into it. So if anyone knows how I can do that, just email me and tell me how to do it or set it up for me.
So you're doing mini comics?
Well, it's just, you know, I started working on the story and I wanted to serialize it, but without the big commitment of, oh, it's a big series, sort of a way of doing it so that the, you know, hardcore fans can pick it up and read it without seriously hurting the sales of the ultimate of the collection, which will inevitably follow. So, you know, each one's only like, I only print up like 100 or 200 of them and sell them at conventions and things like that, or you know, through the mail. So
this is starts out as a mini comic, and eventually it's going to be collected into another graphic novel.
Yes.
Now this one, do you kind of have ahead of time know what the story is going to be, or is it you're just kind of letting it develop through itself?
Well, this one actually is probably the most, I plan for it to be much shorter, say 150 to 200 pages, so I actually do have, you know, the longer the book is, the more room you have to play around and explore the characters, so since it's only going to be 200 pages, I felt like I really had to know a lot more going in, so it's a much tighter plot in that sense.
Do you want to let the listeners know what it's going to be about?
Sure. Mm-hmm. It's about a guy who wants to stop smoking, so he goes to get like hypnotized to try to stop smoking. And when he comes out of his trance, he's actually in high school. You know, he's essentially reliving high school as a 15-year. He's like, you know, a 40-year-old brain inside of a 15-year-old body, and hilarity ensues. So high school's always been sort of aside from mentally ill people, high school has always been a sort of obsession of mine. And
I noticed that near the end of Box Office Poison, was it in the Bop book?
Right.
Where the one character really gets fanatical about her high school.
That's right.
And what's happened to everyone.
So, I was hoping by doing a story like this, I could sort of, you know, explore why this is so important to me and, you know, try to examine some of the baggage I've been carrying around. So ideally I wanted to have it finished by next summer, which would be my 20th anniversary of 20 years since I graduated high school. But
something to take to the reunion.
Here you go, suckers!
But it's turned out to be a slower process than I had hoped. But, you know, I'm still hoping to have it finished next year, so we'll see.
And you're going to have chapters 2 and 3 at XPX? Hopefully,
chapters 2 and 3 will be in one mini-comic, and that'll be at SPX next month.
Well,
I'm actually working on chapter 5 right now, but the lag time is a bit slower in the mini-comics. They're coming out slower than I'm actually working on them. So.
Okay. Well, I'll pick one up when I go to SPX.
Great. I look forward to seeing you.
Make the journey. It'll be my first big trip across the country. So,
is that when you're going to New York as well?
Yeah, I'm going to go to New York and go crazy for 5 days, and then somehow me and my buddy are going to make our way down to Bethesda. Lovely Bethesda.
Somehow?
Yeah, we're probably going to take the train.
Oh.
No, we're going to hitchhike. I'm going to hitch up my pant leg. And
that is the coolest way to do it.
The hitchhiking or the train?
The hitchhiking. If you can't ride choppers, hitchhiking is the best way to go. Coolest way to go. Not the best way to go, but the coolest way to go.
That's what all the hip kids are doing now.
Yeah, exactly. That's
what all the cartoonists in New York do.
When you're driving down 95 from New York to Bethesda, the roads are littered with hitchhiking alternative cartoonists with their thick rim glasses and their silkscreen mini comics. So. Can't miss them.
I look forward to the sight. Now, what's the New York comic scene like? I know that's kind of like a bloated question, I guess. But
what was the question?
What's the New York comic scene like there? Is there a lot of like kind of camaraderie?
And you know, there's a lot of people here, and we tend to see each other like at signings and you know, events, you know, whatever comics events are going on, or you know, at Wednesday when the new comics come out, you'll bump into people at the comic shops. But I don't know how much of a, you know, overall camaraderie there is. I think everyone has their little groups and, you know, their friends that they hang out with who's, you know, but I don't know, you know, there's so many cartoonists here. There's got to be,
yeah,
you know, 75, 100 cartoonists here. So, you know, it would be unwieldy to have everyone in one big room. So I think it's just more or less everyone sticks with their, you know, smaller cliques, for lack of a better term, you know, unless there's some big event going on where everyone gets to see each other and stuff. So,
well, I'll have to go to New Comic Day in New York.
Well, I don't want to oversell it like, oh, it's a who's who of, you know.
Well, it's interesting. We actually, at our own comic store that we shop at, a good chunk of local artists, we all go for lunch, usually, if we run into each other. Not that I do comics, I just talk about them.
Yeah, I generally, me and another cartoonist, a friend of mine, Mike Dawson, we pretty much get together every Wednesday to go, you know, look at comics. We don't buy much generally, but then we, you know, get some food afterwards. And
what kind of stuff is sticking out to you that's new in the comics world?
Can I say geez? Does that count as
a, you can say sweet Jesus. Last week we were talking about zombie Jesus, so.
Okay. Whenever anyone asks you that, what do you enjoy? I instantly freeze up and can't think of a single thing. I actually don't buy nearly as many comics as I used to, which seems to be the trend, which seems to be the, from what a lot of people I talk to, when they go pro, they sort of lose that, not love of comics, but you don't enjoy reading them as much as I used to.
That's an interesting thing, because I've noticed that in other kind of things, like I have friends who are musicians.
Right.
And once they get more and more into their musical careers, the only music they know is stuff from when they, you know, first were getting into music. They don't know anything new. They don't listen to anything new. They're just, you know, maybe playing some old blues or something. And
yeah,
I think
that's true for me as well. I mean, in terms of commerce, I think once you sort of get, you know, once it's a business, you sort of, well, personally, when I get a new comic, you know, you're reading it as a story, but you're also like, well, who is this guy? Is he more famous than I am? Is he less famous than I am? Is he, you know, a threat to me? Well, what kind of inking did he use here? Oh, I like that brushwork. What kind of lettering did he use? You know, you can't really sort of, it's tough to enjoy it as a comic, I find. But I just actually read, I don't know how to say her last name, Allison
Betchell.
We were talking about that book today, Fun Home.
Yes, yeah.
Brilliant.
I really liked it. So that was one I picked up recently, which I really enjoyed. I picked up Rick Geary's his latest Treasury of Victorian Murder.
Oh,
I forget the title of it, but yeah, I love that whole series.
We had a good chat with him about that on the show, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Talk to all the stars, then.
We try to.
Clearly, if you're getting to me, you're reaching the... You're scraping the bottom at this point. If you're having me on the show, then you're like, well...
Nothing like comic self-deprecation.
You're big in France.
Well, this is true.
Hey, you received an award in France.
I did, at Angoulême, in 2005, I guess it was.
What was the award for?
It was best, sort of like, I guess it translates into like best debut graphic novel.
Wow.
Or the translation of Box Office Poison.
So, you don't speak French, do you?
I speak no French whatsoever.
So, you just have to basically trust the fact that they did a good job. Well, you got an award, so they must have done a good job translating it.
Yeah, I'm guessing the translator was very good, because they clearly improved my work enough where I won an award in France. So, I definitely thanked her when I won the award, because I hold her entirely responsible for whatever success the book had. So, that was really a crazy event. I certainly did not think I was going to win that award.
Nice.
Well, you were there then.
Oh yeah, I was there.
Oh, good.
So.
Now, you were mentioning earlier a history buff.
Yeah.
What kind of history is your, like, your super interest, since that's something that may relate to comics in the future?
Mostly American history. I was a really huge Civil War buff for a while. You guys know about the Civil War? Do Canadians know about the American Civil War?
Colin's fanatical about military history.
I'm a war gamer.
Oh, okay.
I was reading about the Battle of Chancellorsville yesterday.
Just yesterday?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like I said, he's fanatical.
Actually, lately I've been reading much more books about the American Revolution, so I'm trying to go back a bit further. The Revolution's tougher because, if being farther back with no photography, the characters are a bit more, everyone has those tri-cornered hats and the wigs. It's harder to relate to the people of the 1700s than it is even 100 years later.
I've always had trouble reading about the American Revolution because so much of it seems to be, I don't know, it's just like biblical almost in the way people approach it. It's like sacred history for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's tough to, I just finished reading a biography of George Washington, and the author even says it's very hard to write about him because, he's George Washington. It's like writing writing a biography of Moses, it's just so, like someone said about George Washington that he excretes marble. They didn't use the word excretes, but they used the vulgar term. But that whole era, everyone just seems so, like demigods or something like that. So it's hard to relate to them as people. So.
And so much of it has been taken up with I don't know, propaganda.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's definitely that's definitely true. I mean, I particularly find it interesting the early years of them starting the United States. Sort of like, what were they going to do? What were their attitudes? Different people had different ideas about what was going to be going on. So, you tend to think of history as being inevitable. Like this would have eventually happened, but once you read any amount of history, even one small change could really have a drastic effect on.
I should send you my newest mini comic. It's called A Short History of the Great Undefended Border. It's all about the times that Canada has been invaded from the United States.
Yeah, that's we keep trying. We kept trying, but we could not do it.
There's no point now.
You want us, you can have us.
And now it's more of a cultural invasion than a military invasion.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got Harper in charge. He's basically Bush's... Well, there's some things you can't say on the radio.
Bush's bitch?
Yeah.
Oh!
That's not a curse word. We already established that.
Yeah.
My buddy was...
I was actually in Canada after the 2004 election. We went to Quebec for our honeymoon, and it was right after the election. And it was interesting seeing the election results in a different country because clearly Bush is not well-regarded by other countries.
No, he's, I don't think Harper will ever win a full majority election here as long as he's so buddy-buddy with Bush.
Well, I don't think he's very popular in New York, is he?
Oh, Bush? No, he's definitely not popular in New York. In New York City, at least. It's definitely, blue state territory.
So have you ever actually been tempted to do historical work, historical comics?
I have, but again, lazy. It would seem like in order to convey history, you really have to put a lot of detail into costumes and settings and things like that, which...
That's part of the fun.
Yeah, costumes I'm okay with. And I love drawing people, but, perspective and, horses. Horses, anytime you draw older, stories, and horses are can be tricky to draw. I would love to write a story and have someone else draw it. That would definitely free me up.
Check out Peter Bagg's Founding Fathers stories and the newest hates. I don't think he has much in the way of perspective there.
That's true. I did do a U.S. president. So.
Theodore Roosevelt?
Not Teddy, but Theodore.
No, okay.
Why? You got an issue with that?
No. It's just usually people say Lincoln or Washington.
Well, that's actually in Box Office Poison. I remember reading that where two of the characters were arguing in a party about...
Right.
Was it Lincoln and Roosevelt they're arguing over?
I don't
obscure parts.
It was Roosevelt. It might have been... I don't even
McKinley?
Remember now. You're going to make me actually get it out and look, but... But yeah, I mean, that's where I sort of indulged my... But I actually did do story, you know, a one-page story chronicling an event in the life of Theodore Roosevelt where he was shot making a speech and went on to speak for an hour and a half with a bullet in his chest.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, he was on the campaign trail and some...
He's badass.
And to meet some mentally ill gentleman... shot him in the chest, and he had like a speech in his vest pocket, so that sort of slowed it down, but you know, definitely had blood pouring down, and, you know, he had a wound in his chest as he was addressing everyone, and then they finally said, oh, you have to go to the hospital, so.
Hey, I'd vote for that.
Well, that's it's not even almost his politics I agree with. He's just such an interesting character that you know, that's what I think makes him so fascinating, that he definitely lived life, you know, a crazy... life. Not crazy life, but a vigorous...
A full life.
Yes, this is true.
And apparently, if you watch Deadwood, he was really close friends with Seth Bullock in real life.
Sure.
I'm a fanatical Deadwood fan. I mention it almost every week. There's something wrong with me, I think. So you... we're getting near the end of the time. A quick thing. You were taught by dearly departed Mr. Eisner.
This is true. He was a student. He was a teacher of mine. I don't know how much I actually... absorb because or did you have a question about that before I
well I'd say about you know learning somewhat you know even if you're saying it's minimal you still you know
well I, you had... when I say minimal I don't put any of the blame for that on Will Eisner. I totally put it on me and my wise ass friends because I was like you know 20 years old and you know when you're 20 years old and you're like you think you know everything. So, you know, Eisner would be teaching the class, and, you know, we were constantly questioning him about, well, why do you have to do that? Why do you, you know, what, you know, and it actually, I think, was good for you know, the student, for Will and for us, because, you know, it's sort of, you know, it wasn't just a matter of do whatever he says, he's Will Eisner. And for some reason, also at the time, Eisner was not, he was well-regarded, but I think more recently he's become more well-regarded. So, or just maybe just at the time when I was a snot-nosed punk, I didn't sort of didn't appreciate who he was. So I was like, you know, he's Will Eisner. Yeah, he's a, you know, at the time he didn't really particularly mean more to me than like Carmen Infantino or Gene Colan or some of the other teachers I had. I mean, I liked him better because he was, you know, a bit more, I don't know, intellectually curious than some of the other guys, you know, and was willing to talk out stuff like that as opposed to just listen, just do what I say, okay. So.
Cool.
But well, yeah, it was good having him as a teacher.
I want to thank you for coming on the show with us.
It went by very fast.
Yeah, that was good. Oh. I like that. I didn't even get around to playing, you know, another song. But well, I'll end the show off later with one of your
okay,
songs.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for having me on the show.
What's the song you'd like us to play? The Flaming Lips or the Inner Peace? Or the Nellie McKay, I should say.
Let's put on Inner Peace.
Okay.
Also, when does this go on the air?
This is live. People
Whoa,
in Canada.
Wait a second. Just kidding. See, that's radio humor.
And it'll be available as a podcast later on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to that. We have a podcast site, www.crowncommission.com.
Well, that would be awesome.
Where you can check out interviews with people like Rick Geary and Bob Fingerman and more.
Spain.
Wow. And so I'll see you guys at SPX. And
I'll be there.
Well, yeah. I won't be there.
And Wednesday night at Jim Hanley's.
Yeah, is it night? Go in the evening, and there's all the craziness.
Oh, it's a three ring circus! Bunch of nerds walking around.
No, my new Civil War issue is out. Oh, yep, narf, narf, narf.
That's pretty much it.
Okay, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks
a lot, you guys.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
That was Alex Robinson, creator of Tricked and Box Office Poison and Bop and Too Cool to Be Forgotten. Too Cool to Be Forgotten, and I am looking forward to meeting him when I make my way down to SPX and New York, maybe. I'll show up at the comic store and be like a crazy fanboy. What up? What up? What up? There's a whole whack of events happening this weekend and over the next couple of weeks. Friday night, there is a launch party for... what's his name? Mark Bell's new book, Nog Adod. Now, it's down in Gastown on Carroll or something. I'm just going to see if I can find it online. Nog Adod is a great collection of all his old minis. Or is it Naga God? What was it? Naga? Naga Dodd?
I don't remember exactly, but...
There we go. Naga Dodd. Okay, I can't find where Launch Party is. Look in the new Only magazine. There's a whole article about that.
It's part of Swarm.
Is it part of Swarm?
It's part of Swarm, which is a annual art gallery extravaganza event that happens tonight at Mount Pleasant. Tomorrow... was it Friday? I believe it's at Gastown and downtown area. And Naga Dog will be a part of that. So if you can find it with the Swarm information, I'm sure.
I think it's at the... where is it here? Oh, I think I found it.
Uh-huh.
No, this is a Toronto launch party. Thanks, Mark Bell. No, I'm just bugging. Go to Only Magazine and pick one up anywhere. They're free. On Saturday night, Terry Plummer, wife of Mr. Owen Plummer, who is in Naga Dodd, is doing a launch for some art at
Lucky's
Comics. Go by, say hi to Gabe. Gabe is a great guy, and the Plummers are great people. I actually haven't met Terry yet, but, you know.
You haven't?
No.
Oh.
I'm not very social.
Oh, well, you got to get out for the Swarm. It's a big art party.
Art farty.
Party.
And next week, our friends and your friends, the Radar friends, are doing a play for the Vancouver Fringe Festival. A 20-minute play, Two Strangers, a Train Station, a Disaster, a Meeting of Happenstance brings together very different people with similar origins and similar destinations. Where will the journey take them? And what will it do to them? And you, have you achieved enlightenment? If not, don't come to the show. This is the next step.
All in 20 minutes?
20 minutes. Heather, Jordan, and Colleen, and Dorian. I don't know Dorian. There's no picture. There's a picture of the back of his head. Go to luggage.co.nr for times. I'm thinking maybe if I go... Oh, they're playing tonight at 7:40, but I'll be busy. Because tonight, if you're not doing anything, go to the Answer Club and see Damo Suzuki, the singer of Can. It's going to be crazy.
Oh, and...
Sean Cranberry's putting it on, and he was on here doing the James Dean interview with me. And on Sunday is the Comic Con, Vancouver Comic Con Heritage Hall, with Michael T. Gilbert and his wife, I think, will be there too. And they're comics historians, and Michael T. Gilbert did Mr. Monster, and which is also one of the few Alan Moore comics that I'm having trouble finding, is one that he did a couple of years ago, about 5 years ago. Michael T. Gilbert, Janet Gilbert, Kelly Everhart, Robin Thompson, who was here last week, Ken Bosom, Jason Pultz, does Scary Bear and Friends Online, Vern Andrew, creator of comic 420. I wonder what that's about. Jordan Neufeld, Sean Astey, man, that kid's good. His book Marooned will be there. Get it if you don't have it yet. It's awesome. Don King, yeah, I know. I don't stop talking, do I, Colin? He's just staring at me, waiting to say something. Critical Hit Comics, Radar Friends, and the Sonar Gang. There we go. Go ahead, Colin.
Oh, I was just wondering if it was too early to start plugging Word on the Street.
You can plug Word on the Street because Joe Sacco will be there.
Joe Sacco will be there. And, of course, there will be the annual Word Under the Street, the room downstairs that you have to search for, where they keep all the small press cartoonists and poets and the other freaky people that they're trying to keep away from a family-friendly event.
Yeah, the best is when a bunch of old ladies went to Robin Bushy's table to pick up Cinema Sower. On that note...
Oh, the 24th. Sunday the 24th of September.
Next week, you know what? I don't know what's going to be next week. I'm hoping at Diners Nelson. If it's not, it'll be us talking about good stuff we've read recently. And look forward to interviews with Jamie Hernandez and Renee French and more. Ink Studs. Up next, Crimes and Treasons.
Where are they?
Oh, I saw them.
A dummy, a retarded dummy. Yeah, you suck out of luck. You're no playboy bunny. Hey, so you laugh, it's a gas. They're right on the money. They're just being funny, hysterically funny. Yeah.